the philosophy of Ishvara. Who is Ishvara? Janmadasya yataha. From whom is the birth, continuation and dissolution of the universe? He is Ishvara, the eternal, the pure, the ever-free, the almighty, the all-knowing, the all-merciful, the teacher of all teachers. And above all, sa Ishvaraha anirvachaniya premaswarupaha. He, the Lord, is of His own nature, inexpressible love. These certainly are the definitions of a personal God. Are there then two gods? The not this, the Sachidananda, the existence, knowledge, bliss of the philosopher, and this God of love of Bhakta? No, it is the same Sachidananda who is also the God of love, the impersonal and personal in one. It has always to be understood that the personal God worshipped by a Bhakta is separate or different from the Brahman. All Brahman, the one without a second, only the Brahman as unity or absolute, is too much of an abstraction to be loved and worshipped. So the Bhakta chooses the relative aspect of Brahman, that is Ishvara, the supreme ruler. To use a simile, Brahman is as the clay or substance out of which an infinite variety of articles are fashioned. As clay, they are all one, but form or manifestation differentiates them. Before every one of them was made, they all existed potentially in the clay, and of course, they are identical substantially, but when formed, and so long as the form remains, they are separate and different. The clay mouse can never become a clay elephant, because as manifestations, form alone makes them what they are, though as unformed clay, they are all one. Ishvara is the highest manifestation of the absolute reality, or in other words, the highest possible realm of the absolute by the human mind. Creation is eternal, and so also is Ishvara. In the fourth pada of the fourth chapter of his sutras, after stating the almost infinite power and knowledge which will come to the liberated soul after the attainment of moksha, Vyasa makes the remark in aphorism that none, however, will get the power of creating, ruling and dissolving the universe, because that belongs to God alone. In explaining the sutra, it is easy for the dualistic commentators to show how it is ever impossible for a subordinate soul, Jivaha, to have the infinite power and total independence of God. The thorough dualistic commentator Madhvacharya deals with this passage in his usual summary method by quoting a verse from Varaha Purana. In explaining this aphorism, the commentator Ramanuja says, "This doubt being raised, whether among the powers of the liberated souls is included that unique power of the Supreme One, that is, of creation, etc., of the universe, and even the lordship of all, or whether without that the glory of the liberated consists only in the direct perception of the Supreme One, we get as an argument the following. It is reasonable that the liberated get the lordship of the universe, because the scriptures say he attains to extreme sameness with the Supreme One and all his desires are realized. Now, extreme sameness and realization of all desires cannot be attained without the unique power of the Supreme Lord, namely that governing universe. Therefore, to attain the realization of all desires and the extreme sameness with the Supreme, we must all admit that the liberated get the power of ruling the whole universe. To this we reply that the liberated get all the powers except that of ruling the universe. Ruling the universe is a thing the form and the life and the desires of all the sentient and the non-sentient beings. The liberated ones from whom all that veils, his true nature has been removed, only enjoy the unobstructed perception of the Brahman, but do not possess the power of ruling the universe. This is proved from the scriptural text, from whom all these things are born, by which all that are born live, and to whom they, departing, return, ask about it. That is Brahman. If this quality of ruling the universe be a quality common even to the liberated, then this text would not apply as a definition of Brahman, defining him through his rulership of the universe. The uncommon attributes alone define a thing. Therefore, in texts like, "My beloved boy, alone in the beginning there existed the one with a second, that saw and felt, I will give birth to the many, that projected heat." Brahman indeed alone existed in the beginning. That one evolved, that projected a blessed form, the Kshatra. All these gods are Kshatras, Varuna, Soma, Rudra, Parjanya, Yama, Mrityu, Ishana. Atman indeed existed alone in the beginning, nothing else vibrated. He thought of projecting the world, he projected the world after. Alone Narayana existed, neither Brahma nor Ishana, nor the Dvaya Prithivi, nor the stars, nor water, nor fire, nor Soma, nor the sun. He did not take pleasure alone. He, after his meditation, had one daughter, the 10 organs, etc. And in others as, who living in the earth is separate from the earth, who living in the Atman, etc., the Shrutis speak of the Supreme One as the subject of the work of ruling the universe. Nor in these descriptions of the ruling of the universe is there any position for the liberated soul, by which such a soul may have the ruling of the universe ascribed to it. In explaining the next sutra, Ramanuja says, "If you say it is not so, because there are direct texts in the Vedas in evidence to the contrary, these texts refer to the glory of the liberated in the spheres of the subordinate deities." This also is an easy solution of the difficulty. Although the system of Ramanuja admits the unity of the total, within that totality of existence there are, according to him, eternal differences. Therefore, for all practical purposes, this system also being dualistic, it was easy for Ramanuja to keep the distinction between the personal soul and the personal God very clear. We shall now try to understand what the great representative of the Advaita school has to say on the point. We shall see how the Advaita system maintains all the hopes and aspirations of the dualist intact, and at the same time propounds its own solution of the problem in consonance with the high destiny of divine humanity. Those who aspire to retain their individual mind even after liberation and to remain distinct will have ample opportunity of realizing their aspirations and enjoying the blessing of the qualified Brahman. These are they who have been spoken of in the Bhagavata Purana thus: "O King, such are the glorious qualities of the Lord, that the sages, whose only pleasure is in the self, and from whom all fetters have fallen off, even they love the omnipresent with the love that is for love's sake." These are they who are spoken of by the Sankhyas as getting merged in nature in this cycle, so that after attaining perfection they may come out in the next as lords of world systems. But none of these ever becomes equal to Ishvara. Those who attain to that state where there is neither creation nor created nor creator, where there is neither knower nor knowable nor knowledge, where there is neither I nor thou nor he, where there is neither subject nor object nor relation, there who is seen by whom? Such persons have gone beyond everything to where words cannot go nor mind, gone to that which the Shrutis declare as not this, not this. But for those who cannot or will not reach this state, there will inevitably remain the triune vision of the one undifferentiated Brahman as nature, soul and the interpenetrating sustainer of both, Ishvara. So, when Prahlada forgot himself, he found neither the universe nor its cause. All was to him one infinite, undifferentiated by name and form. But as soon as he remembered that he was Prahlada, there was the universe before him, and with it the Lord of the universe, the repository of an infinite number of blessed qualities. So it was with the blessed gopis. So long as they had lost sense of their own personal identity and individuality, they were all Krishnas. And when they began again to think of him as the one to be worshipped, then they were gopis again. And immediately, Tasam Avirabhut Shaurihi Mayamana Mukambujaha Pitambharadhara Sragvi Sakshat Manmatha Manmataha. Unto them appeared Krishna with a smile on his lotus face, clad in yellow robes and having garlands on the embodied conqueror in beauty of the god of love. Now, to go back to Acharya Shankara, he says, those who by worshipping the qualified Brahman attain conjunction with the supreme ruler, preserving their own mind, is their glory limited or unlimited? This doubt arising, we get as an argument. This glory should be unlimited because of the scriptural texts. They attain their own kingdom. To him all the gods offer worship. Their desires are fulfilled in all the worlds. As an answer to this, Vyasa writes, without the power of ruling the universe, barring the power of creation, etc. of the universe, the other powers such as anima, etc. are acquired by the liberated. As to ruling the universe, that belongs to the eternally perfect Ishvara. Why? Because he is the subject of all the scriptural texts as regards creation, etc., and the liberated souls are not mentioned therein in any fashion whatsoever. The Supreme Lord, indeed, is alone engaged in ruling the universe. The texts as to creation, etc., all point to him. Besides, there is given the adjective ever perfect. Also, the scriptures say that the powers, anima, etc., of the others are from the search after and the worship of God. Therefore, they have no place in the ruling of the universe. Again, on account of their possessing their own minds, it is possible that their wills may differ, and that wills one desires creation, another may desire destruction. The only way of avoiding this conflict is to make all wills subordinate to some one will. Therefore, the conclusion is that the wills of the liberated are dependent on the will of the supreme ruler. Bhakti then can be directed towards Brahman only in his personal aspect. Plesho adhikatarastesha avyakta sakta chetasam. The way is more difficult for those whose mind is attached to the absolute. Bhakti has to float on smoothly with the current of our nature. True, it is that we cannot have any idea of the Brahman which is not anthropomorphic, but is it not equally true of everything we know? The greatest psychologist the world has ever known, Bhagavan Kapila, demonstrated ages ago that human consciousness is one of the elements in the makeup of all the objects of our perception and conception, internal as well as external. Beginning with our bodies and going up to Ishvara, we may see that every object of our perception is this consciousness plus something else, whatever that may be, and this unavoidable mixture is what we ordinarily think of as reality. Indeed it is, and ever will be all of the reality that is possible for the human mind to know. Therefore, to say that Ishvara is unreal because he is anthropomorphic is sheer nonsense. It sounds very much like the Occidental squabble on idealism and realism, which fearful looking quarrel has for its foundation a mere play on the word real. The idea of Ishvara covers all the ground ever denoted and connoted by the word real, and the Ishvara is as real as anything else in the universe. And after all, the word real means nothing more than what has now been pointed out. Such is our philosophical conception of Ishvara.